Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Good morning. Welcome to this edition of Atlanta Business Radio, powered by Business Radio X. I'm your host, Alex Gossett-Shiflett, and I'd like to welcome our producer, Ryan Redhawk McPherson. Ryan, how are you today?
Fantastic. Here on a Monday morning, day after Mother's Day. I hope you had a lovely Mother's Day.
I did. It was beautiful yesterday.
Yeah, I'm
glad. The weather, everything.
Yeah, and your family treated you nice?
Oh, yeah.
Good.
I got taken out to dinner.
Good.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Well, we have two very special guests in our studio today, but before we get started, make sure you are connected with us on social media. Twitter at Business Radio X. Also, today's show, Atlanta Business Radio, you can follow us at Atlanta Biz Radio. And you can connect with me personally on Twitter at Alex G. Shiflett. I'd love to hear from you, and you can check out the pictures of our guests in the studio today. I'd like to welcome Diane Buffington from Wild Hope Art Gallery. Diane, welcome to the show.
Hi, Alex. Thank you.
And I'd like to welcome Jason Brubaker from Nidri. Did I say it correct?
Nidri Flooring.
Nidri Flooring. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Okay. Diane, I'm going to start with you. You are the gallery director of Wild Hope Art Gallery. What made you decide to open an art gallery?
Previously, I had an ad agency, and I was a creative director there. But my background and my college education had been in fine art. So I paint. And when I retired, I started painting. And after filling up my garage with all my paintings, I decided it was time that I should find a place to put them. And why not open an art gallery in my area, Roswell and Alpharetta? There's really not a lot of art galleries there, and I felt like it would be something that would be good for the community to expand their horizons in art. And so it has become, I've had it now for about 2 years.
So when did you first fall in love with art? You said you've studied it school. Tell us about that.
As a child, I mean, when I was in the third grade, I'd never had any classes except I was drawing murals on everyone's, you know, they'd send me from class to class to draw murals on the bulletin boards and whatnot. So it's been a lifelong love for me, and I really enjoy it.
And where did you study?
Well, my degree is from the University of Alabama. So, but I would say that advertising was a great opportunity to use those creative talents. And it was a way to actually put artwork out there. People didn't really realize it, but it was artwork in a way. It made people think and feel, and that's what art does.
Well, tell us about the Wild Hope Art Gallery, and how did you come up with the name?
Oh, well, that's easy, because it was a wild hope. And I would have to say that it's a lot of fun, but it reminds me of having the advertising agency without the staff. So I'm very busy planning events and doing things like that. And we have a lot of events there, and usually about once a month I'll do a show, and I search around for wonderful artists that I really enjoy their work and think that people ought to know about them. And then I have a group of about 500 patrons now that will that I'll communicate with, and they will actually show up for these events. And they're a lot of fun. It's wine and cheese and usually some unusual art. I've had a show for folk artists. That was one of my most successful shows. Also, I represent 20 artists from Asheville, and I had 7 of them down, and we had a really good time, and people enjoyed their artwork. So that's, you know, basically, I think the events sort of keep the gallery fresh and going, and it's always something new in the gallery. So it's a lot of fun.
That sounds interesting. When you bring a guest on or bring a guest into the gallery to have a show. How long does that show usually last?
Usually we'll have a reception to open it, and the artist will be there. After that, it depends on the artist, but usually the work will hang in the gallery for about 2 weeks at least. Okay. Sometimes longer. And then depending on the artist, if he's got something else he or she needs to do, you know, they may need their art or whatnot. But I think one of the most interesting things about the gallery is that when people come in, I see a lot of different kinds of people. Some people go by the door 3 or 4 times and are afraid to come in. And I think it's probably because maybe they don't know a lot about art or they're not sure. But the thing about art is that the only value in art is if it speaks to you. And if you love it, it's great art. And that's what I enjoy, is that when somebody will come in and they'll see something that they love, or maybe they don't see anything they love. Usually, if they don't, I can say, you know, let me come to your house. I'll take pictures of the spaces where you might need something. And then I interview them. And I find out where they grew up, where they go on vacation, what they enjoy. And then I go to all my resources, and I have a lot of them online. And I can usually find the right things.
Yeah, and I've been there at the door looking in, and sometimes it can be intimidating,
I think,
for a person because they're not sure what to do once they come in.
Well, and usually the best thing, I can always tell the art lovers when they come in, because they take their time, they look at everything, they, you know, there's usually a message or some kind of feeling that the artist is trying to evoke, and I think that you have to look at it for a while before you really realize what it is that the artist is saying. There's an energy that comes through from the artist to the viewer, and that's the value of having original art in your home.
Okay, so you have a lot of events. Tell us about the Atlanta Mad Men event.
Oh, that's
been in the news lately.
Yeah, it's been an exciting thing. I found that after I had a few events, there were people who had the same background I had, creative directors for advertising agencies. And so after running into about 3 or 4 of them, we kind of started talking about, wouldn't it be fun to have a show for all the art or all the people who are doing art who used to be in advertising? And so we put our heads together, some pretty important people in the advertising world, Bob Cargill, Ron Sharbo, even Babbitt and Ryman are involved. And we sat down, put a list together of about 100 ex-advertising people. And after communicating with them, we found out that 50 of them were doing artwork. And so we put a show together. We had lots of help because there were people who had great contacts. Moda is going to be hosting an event in June, on June 18th. And it's going to be, it's called Mad Men, the Art Show. And it's all the Mad Men from Atlanta in the 60s, 70s, and 80s who are now retired, who are all doing artwork. And we have 43 artists who will be each bringing 3 pieces to MoDA. And MoDA is the Museum of Design across the street from the High Museum. And it should be a very exciting show. We have a sponsor. It's Buckhead Investment Partners. So they're going to be putting on a nice spread, a nice cocktail bar, that type of thing. And we expect to have quite a large crowd for that show. And then once we have that event at MoDA, it's going to rotate to the Wild Hope Art Gallery, and we'll be there for from the 24th of June through the 29th.
Well, that's something I'm definitely going to come out for. It sounds very interesting. What do you think art buyers are looking for when they consider a gallery?
Well, I think, you know, I think they're looking for whatever appeals to them. And a lot of times they're not sure what it is. So I think maybe pointing someone in the right direction is helpful. Also, working within a budget, I think that's very important. But I think one of the most important things is that having original art in your home does a variety of things. It's inspiring. But particularly if you have children in the home, It is a way to introduce art and creativity to children. They see all kinds of things in it, and it gives them permission to express themselves and to know something about art so that when they grow up and they walk by the art gallery door, they're not afraid
right.
to come in.
They come on in, exactly. Yeah. What kind of art is popular today?
We are in the minimalist period where everything has been sort of smoothed down. All the millennials are looking for not a lot of clutter. And so abstract art is very big. And but I think a lot of people like to see something in their abstract art, you know, something that inspires them or makes them think of something that appeals to them. And so it's very interesting to find the right piece of art for the right person.
Well, describe your art to us. You say you're a painter, you do work.
Yeah.
So tell us how would you describe your work?
I think advertising probably influenced me a lot in my painting. And usually my paintings tell a story. I like to do figures. I like to do it in an expressive way rather than a literal way. And usually there's a story attached to my paintings. And so if you look at it, but I find that the story is always different depending on who's looking at it. It isn't usually what I was thinking, but it tells a story.
And if our audience wanted to take a look at your art, is your art on a website?
Oh, yes. Oh,
okay.
WildHopeArtGallery.com.
Okay.
And I also have another website, DianeBuffingtonFineArt.com, which is solely my art. But the gallery shows a lot of different art from many artists.
And you said your gallery is located in the Roswell, Alpharetta area. Where more specifically?
Right on Holcomb Bridge Road at the Eller Village Shopping Plaza, which is right near Barnwell. Mm-hmm. It's actually where Roswell, Alpharetta, and Johns Creek come together.
Yeah, on the east side of Georgia 400
yes.
as you're heading out
yes.
that way. So that's good. What has been the community response from everyone opening an art gallery in that part of town?
Well, a lot of my friends come and drink my wine at my openings.
That's great. They don't have to go far to stay connected, right?
Right. Right.
That's great. And looking to expand the gallery, looking for more artists. What do you need more of? Create more awareness. What does Wild Hope Art Gallery need more?
Well, I think we need more people to come in. We need more foot
okay.
traffic. But I think the most important thing is that the consulting aspect of it is when somebody is looking for something. I had one lady come in and she said, I just moved in to Ellard. I have all these walls. I don't know what I need. I don't know where to go. Can you help me? Mm-hmm. And going over to her house and it took us about maybe 3 months to 5 months to find all the pieces she was looking for. And almost none of them came from on the walls of the gallery. They all came from different places. So, and in fact, in one case, she showed me a picture of something that she wishes that she could have, but it was gone. Mm-hmm. And so I painted something very similar for her.
Yep.
And
nice.
So, you know, it's very versatile how
that
works.
That's customer service
right
yeah. there.
Yeah. Alex, we made it talk to Diane about getting some artwork in the studio
it's
here,
true.
Right?
Yes. Well, Diane, we're going to come back to you, but I want to bring Jason Brubaker into the conversation. Jason is the VP of Marketing and Sales for Nidri. Am I saying it right?
We hear it both ways. Nidri flooring, or some people pronounce
which
Nidri.
Which is the correct way?
Nidri.
Yes. You're probably going to have to tell me that again. But okay, tell us how Nidri flooring originated. And what's the mission of Nidri Flooring?
Sure. Well, thanks for having me on the show today. It's great to be
our
here.
Pleasure.
Nidri has kind of a unique background. The company actually started in the mid-1960s. There was a company called Gammapar Wood Flooring that produced the world's first acrylic-infused wood floor. It was a real wood floor, but they were infusing liquid acrylic into the wood to make it about 300% more dent resistant, more durable. They were started by grant money from the federal government. And that company had operated up until about 2000. And a fantastic company, but they made some management decisions and things that resulted in that company coming up for sale. And my family acquired the company in 2001. And then we acquired its primary competitor called Permagrain in 2003. And in 2009, we rolled up both of those brands under what's now Nidri Flooring. We were essentially operating two plant locations, one in Virginia, one in Pennsylvania. And we consolidated that, kind of brought everything under the Nidri umbrella. And that's how we've been marketing since 2009, really.
And how did the name originate?
So the name has a bit of an interesting story. My father myself, my family grew up in Virginia, and there is a beautiful horse farm in Albemarle County, Virginia. It's kind of horse country out that way, if you're familiar with that part of the country. This farm was called Nidri Farms, spelled a different way, but they bred high quality racehorses. And this farm was large, hundreds of acres, and just a rich history there and a beautiful place. So the name we thought was a perfect fit for what we're doing. Beautiful horses, beautiful wood flooring, but yet high performance in the racehorses, but high performance with our flooring. So you bridge those two together. And much like Diane's business with art, it's an artful process in the creation of our flooring, but we add the performance element as well. And that's what kind of separates us.
Well, tell us how Nidri Flooring is different from other commercial wood flooring companies.
Sure. Great question. You know, when you think of the flooring business as a whole, it is large and it can be very complex and very confusing to a lot of people. When you break that down into wood flooring, it's even a small wood flooring is overall a pretty small portion of the commercial market. It's a pretty large percentage of the residential market. But our bread and butter from day one has been the acrylic infusion technology. And that's that is really our niche in the field. That's where we're taking real wood, infusing liquid acrylic under heat and high pressure, and creating an end product that is stands up to high traffic and the abuse of everyday wear and tear. And because of that performance feature, the product is used in, you know, high traffic commercial applications really all over the world. So we're very thankful to be a part of some pretty prominent projects all over the world.
Can you name any of those?
Sure. We have done, let's see, most recently, the San Francisco 49ers Stadium, the new Levi Stadium.
So if people have been out there, they've noticed the floor and how nice it is, you can attribute that to Nidri Flooring.
That's right.
Fantastic.
Yeah. We've done the Smithsonian Museum,
wow.
The American flag exhibit there at the Smithsonian. We've done, gosh, if you've walked through a shopping mall, most of the retail stores that have wood flooring, we usually see that is our flooring.
So your application is mostly in these high traffic commercial or public places. And so the type of people who are buying the product then are high end contractors, big corporations like that who are using your product.
That's right. Exactly. Yeah, we do. You know, from the start, we were heavily focused in the retail sector. So like your Bed Bath & Beyond, Barnes & Noble, which we still work with today. They were really key to our business from day one. Since then, we've really expanded into hospitality, working with Marriott, large amusement parks all over the country, a number of different. We've even gotten into kind of wall. People are using wood flooring on walls and ceilings these days. So even expanding there as well.
Any thoughts of expanding into art gallery flooring?
You know, actually,
that's high traffic, especially some of these around here in this area.
It's amazing. We did the Asian Art Museum in San Francisco.
I get paint on the floor.
You know, people are doing that these days too. It's a really, really unique look for wood flooring.
And you can customize it to any color, size, shape. I mean, how detailed can you get into the look of it all?
Right. That's a great question. Our size company, you know, when you look at the landscape of the flooring industry, they're really dominated by three large players. We fit kind of in a middle market category. Not the smallest, we're not the biggest, we're kind of right in the middle. But because of that, we're able to do a lot of unique custom one-off projects where we're working primarily with designers and they're coming to us and saying, hey, this is our design scheme. These are some fabric swatches we have. This is some custom furniture we've developed. And this is the exact look that we're going for. We have some fantastic second, third generation people at our plant in Pennsylvania. A great engineer will send a swatch to the factory. They'll work on some strike-offs, send it back to the designer. They'll prove it, and then we'll work it into production from that point on.
So you do a lot of large scale, like you talked about the Smithsonian, but you do just regular homeowners.
That's right. Yeah, we actually, this past April, we wanted to take this technology and the performance feature and benefit and offer it to the residential consumer. And last April, just about a year ago, we introduced the world's first pet-friendly wood floor.
That's music to my ears.
It's very, very important. You know, I have friends who don't allow my dog to come to their house because they're afraid she will scratch up their wood floors. They love the dog, but she stays on the porch. I don't think I'll be visiting them much more, but if they got some of this flooring that you're talking about, you know.
So tell me you have a miracle for this.
Yeah.
Well, it's really interesting. We've talked to a lot of our customers over the years, and they kept saying, you know, if you had something that would stand up to the abuse of dogs, and just talking to even friends and just kind of personal conversations, dogs were always the big Achilles heel, I guess, in the wood flooring business. So we worked really hard to create not just repackaging our commercial product for the residential market. We worked night and day for about a year and a half developing a unique finish that would go over our acrylic infused wood wear layer, if you will, to create a product that will not dent or scratch with dogs. Mm-hmm. We wanted to be really careful that what we released into the field would stand up to even big dogs like Great Danes. So we did a test floor in a very highly trafficked pet boarding facility, actually in Alpharetta here locally. And we kept that down for about 5 or 6 months. We'd go back, check on it, you know, every week or so, talk to the staff there. And sure enough, there were no scratches in that floor. And so we said, okay, we think we've got something here. And we were okay incorporating this into production.
Now, is it expensive? Because I have a friend back in South Carolina that she has large dogs. And these poor dogs have to wear socks. They make dog socks now. Did you guys know
that?
Yeah,
I've seen those commercials.
And when the dogs come inside, they have to wear these socks. And but how expensive is it?
That's a good question. That's always the first question that people have too. We're not the most expensive. Certainly, there's a lot of products on the market that are in the $10, $11, $12 and up range. We're in that $7 to $8 consumer price point, which is really kind of that mid 80% of the market. And there's a lot of product now that less expensive than that. But where, how we position that, we like to educate the customer that you're going to be refinishing your floor 2, 3, 4 times in your lifetime. If you own that floor for about 40 years, you're probably going to refinish that floor about 4 to 5 times in that time frame. And you average the cost of doing that, plus being out of your house for days and having dust and smell. You don't have to do that with our products. So we think that the value there is you're actually saving money in the long run, and not to mention kind of the headache of being out of your house.
And technology has got to be driving a lot of this too, because what's, you know, relevant and good today, next year and beyond may be something completely different. So you're always researching and developing, I imagine.
That's it. Our claim to fame, the residential brand is called Hardwoof, by the way. Instead of hardwood, it's called Hardwoof. So what we've done is we kind of put a guarantee behind it. We said, if you find a tougher wood floor, we'll buy it for you. And that guarantee actually puts us on the hot seat to say, you know what, you better really make sure you have the toughest wood floor in the market, because that's essentially what we're offering at the end of the day.
And I know a lot of folks are going through some of the engineered wood that's out there and putting that down, but there's a lot of side effects and off-gassing and stuff that people talk about that. Does that play into your product?
It does. That's the big issue today in wood flooring. You don't need to look too far to look in the media and see some big names that have really come under fire. And so We have been focused from the earliest days on providing an eco-friendly wood floor. We're one of the first to have what's called FSC certification, Forest Stewardship Council certification, floor score for your low emitting material testing, and also using CARB compliant plywood. That's kind of the big buzzword if you're researching wood flooring these days. The emission standards and things are coming really front and center into the industry. And so that's something that we've really focused on a lot.
And you are known, your company is known for being environmentally responsible.
It is. And that's something that we work on all the time because the regulations and the standards are changing rapidly. And so one of the things we try to do is be transparent. We've issued what's called a health product declaration, HPD, and it essentially lists everything that's in our product. It's public information. It's right on our website. We have people full-time that are constantly looking at the regulations and making sure that not only are we complying, but that we're on the cutting edge of getting the right certifications done, things that we don't aren't required to do by law, but things that we feel like are the right thing to do for the customer.
So safe for the kids and the pups.
That's right. That's right. For the whole family.
What are some of the latest trends in the flooring industry?
Well, the flooring industry has gotten very complex. It's gotten very segmented. If you look at it over the past 15 years or so, it used to be that if you were a wood flooring manufacturer, you had your own factory, you were kind of unique 15 years ago. But the reality is, if you open a trade publication, there are dozens, if not hundreds, of people that are selling a flooring product of some sort, whether that's a private label from a distributor, whether that's an import product. The imports alone have created untold numbers of new product brands and categories that have coming in here in the U.S. One of the trends, the LVT, LVP, the luxury vinyl plank, luxury vinyl tile, has been a huge factor in the flooring market. What we have seen, despite that product coming into the foray, is that there's still a constituency of people that say, you know what, I really want a real wood product. At the end of the day, as good as those products look, and they've gotten a lot better, there are a lot of people that say, we just want a real wood floor. And I don't think that's going to be something that's ever going to be completely easy to replicate in the flooring business.
Okay, and how can our audience, if they want to get in touch with you, where can they find you?
But the best way is online first. Our website is nidreflooring.com, N-Y-D-R-E-E, flooring.com. And that's our commercial brand that we go under. Our residential brand, as I mentioned, is Hardwoof. It's H-A-R-D-W-O-O-F.com, hardwoof.com. And we have people dedicated full-time to answering your questions. You can call our 800 number on our website, and we'd be glad to help.
Okay, well, I'm going to open up the floor for some crosstalk.
Do you do your own installations?
That's a great question. We do not do that, but we have a great network of installers that we recommend. We work closely with an association called the NWFA, National Wood Flooring Association. They have certified installers that have been trained, and they have on their website trained installers in every market across the country. And so we try to connect people with those on the residential end. On the commercial end, we work with a great network of commercial flooring contractors all over the country.
Right. When you do the residential, you actually just come in and it's all finished and you just lay it down.
That's right. On the commercial, all of our products are pre-finished.
Installers do that.
Yeah. It comes pre-finished from the factory. And so the installers are able to install it, and you can walk on it essentially the next day.
And then it stands the test of time. You said the common flooring these days, you have to reinstall it, you know, 4 or 5 times over the lifetime of that house. How does that play in? How long does your flooring, you know, what does the wear and tear on that look like?
Yeah, it's funny. The joke internally is that our flooring is going to usually outlast the building that it's installed in. So you're probably going to get tired of the color before you're going to get tired of the performance aspect. Yeah. We were in the Kansas City International Airport since the mid 60s, early 70s, I guess. They finally tore it out just because they were doing a redesign of the building. But performance-wise, it still looked great. We talked to the installers that were there. Right.
But aesthetically, you kind of get tired of it after a while and you want to change it.
Maybe
right?
You want to change the look. That's right.
That's very cool. Exactly. So, yeah. And I'd like to ask both of y'all about Atlanta. Why is it important to you? First, Diane, what brought you to Atlanta? And then Alpharetta, particularly for your Wild Hope Art Gallery.
Well, I've been in Atlanta since 73. And I think that if you were going to be in advertising, you had to be in a major market. And Atlanta is a major market. Mm-hmm. And so it was really, when I first got out of college, I worked at a radio or at a television station as the art director for a year or two. And then, you know, there really wasn't much to do there back in that. And I mean, that was a long time ago. Back in those days, basically, I would draw little pictures that they would put behind the news guy. Mm. When he would do his news reports. And I mean, they were basically painted little things that they put up on the camera. But I think that Atlanta is a perfect place for creativity. And so being in Alpharetta, I've decided that fine artwork is something that people needed to know about. And I don't think that there is a huge market for fine art or original art. And I felt like, well, recently we just did a program with Mount Pisgah high school students. And we did a juried art show where they all brought their artwork in. And I went around and got sponsors. And we actually gave cash prizes for best of show and first, second, and third place. So I think it's a place where it was needed. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think Alpharetta is a good place for an art gallery.
It certainly is. And for you, you know, you're not from Atlanta. Your family's right. Background is in Virginia. What originally brought you here and ultimately headquarters of the company here, right?
Right. Well, our factory is actually in Pennsylvania now, as I mentioned. But yeah, grew up in Virginia. And when we acquired Gammapar, the big void in markets was Atlanta. We needed a rep to go and promote the product in Atlanta. So I moved here to do that. My entire family is here in Georgia now, and we love it. We moved here because it's a great place to live. But there's also a great design community here as well. We're thankful to work with some of the largest design firms in the country, some of which are based here in Atlanta. And there's also a great flooring contractor community as well. You've got Dalton, which is kind of the flooring capital of the world. Although our plant isn't there, there's kind of a hotbed of flooring activity here in Georgia that we're thankful to be a part of.
Yeah, definitely. And certainly being an international city, being able to do business all around the world.
That's right.
Out of Atlanta, as the world, you know, could use your products all over. And do you get to travel to some of these exotic places that you mentioned and kind of see it firsthand?
A few I do. I'd like to do that a little bit more. But
take the family to the Smithsonian, right?
That's right. That's next on the list, actually. I was thinking about that the other day. We need to get up there and take the kids to see.
Look what Daddy's company did here.
Exactly. Right?
And lives on forever in the halls of America.
That's right.
Dan, I have a question for you. If we have an artist listening to the show today and they are interested in
representation.
Yes. Yeah. Is that process like?
They should go to my website under About, scroll down. There's a section that tells you how to submit your work to be considered to be in the gallery.
Hmm. Okay.
Interesting. Yeah. And I imagine your house is filled with lots of artwork too, right?
Yeah.
Not just your own, but really. Who are some of your favorite artists or like currently that you're really enthralled with?
Well, you know, there's a lady by the name of Maggie Siner. And I took a workshop under her not too long ago. But she's from Boston, and she's very well known. Her artwork hangs in a lot of important places. And then another one would be Derek Pinnix, which I just met him recently. And he does boats. Beautiful boats. So I've started painting boats lately.
Boats. Any kind of boat. Rowboats, you know, big boats.
Mostly rowboats.
Just rowboats.
Yeah.
That's very tranquil kind of thought.
Exactly.
Right
in fact,
there.
I put one of my latest paintings on my website, and you know how you get likes. I got like over 60 likes in it, which was like one of the biggest responses I've gotten. So I'm going to paint more boats from now on.
Yeah, fantastic, for sure. And any advice you would give to a young artist out there, someone who's really trying to break out and be known, what are some good first steps from your perspective they could take?
Well, I think, you know, you just have to be committed. It's difficult because it's very difficult for an artist to make any money. I mean, that's why people like me went into advertising. And fortunately, going into advertising, it enabled me to pursue my love. Mm-hmm. You know, it was not something that a lot of times I say it's a good thing I don't have to make a living in my gallery because I don't know that I would. But I think that, you know, probably if I were talking to a young person who's getting ready to do a creative career, I would tell them to make sure that you have a good minor that has some commercial appeal. But go to a school like SCAD. SCAD is one of the best resources in the country, let alone just Atlanta. It's a wonderful school. And they say that they prepare people for creative careers. And I think one of the things is that math and science is all good, but it's those creative people that make companies go. So
very nicely said, for sure. And diversify. Like you said, don't just hang your hopes and dreams on one thing, like being an artist or a painter, but, you know, get involved creatively in a lot of different things and see what plays out for you. You may find yourself as a gallery owner after years in advertising, like Diane herself. So, and what about you? Any advice for a young flooring salesman out there, someone who's got dreams of breaking into the market? What would you say to them?
Well, you know, I think we're not so unique in that we're always looking for one, as Diane said, creative people, because the flooring business can be a bit stagnant. And so we're always looking for the new trend, the next hot color palette that's going to resonate with the design community. So there's definitely the need for the creative aspect. I would say also there's a huge need for good salespeople. You can't underestimate the power and the value of a good salesperson. And it's becoming a bit more difficult to find good salespeople across the country.
Why is that?
You know, I think there's probably a number of different reasons. One is they probably have an old mindset about what the sales process is like. We view selling a bit more as a resource, as a servant to the people that we're dealing with. So that we're kind of providing options and we're helping them to look from, you know, technical attributes and help them through that process. I think some people probably think about the hard sell and that's all that it is, but it's really so much more than that.
I think it's empathy. And, you know, my business in advertising was all sales. And I had many clients very similar to yours. And just being able to listen and understand what they're looking for and to be able to sort of understand their needs. And then you bring them great ideas and tell them it was their idea, actually. That works.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, Diane and Jason, thank you so much for being on the show today. This has been very, very wonderful interview.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And if your business is doing something exciting and you would like to be featured on Business Radio X, reach out to us on the contact page at businessradiox.com. Special thanks to our producer, Ryan Redhawk McPherson. All righty, my friends, thank you for listening. I'm Alex Gossett-Shiflett, your hostess with the mostest. And as always, I'm wondering who will be my next guest on Business Radio X.